Welcome to War Gaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. War Gaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 140. That's right, 140. How to survive your friendly local game store closing with special guest Aaron Bostian. So I want to welcome all of you new and longtime listeners alike. You're in for a treat today. Aaron is a guy who's been on here the most out of all of our guests, and we always have a really good time. So if you've never heard him before, you need to listen to all of this and then go back in the archive and listen to the other episodes that he's been on. And actually, Aaron, let's just welcome you to the show. So thank you for coming by today.
All right. Well, thank you, Jonathan. I ran a little bit late being stuck in traffic, but actually this was a pretty easy meetup since I'm at home and you're at home. So
yeah,
different states, same time zone though.
One of the recent episodes I did with Joshua all the way over in Australia, we were planning that for weeks and weeks and weeks because we were trying to figure out what time zones and what days would work. And yeah. It's ridiculous, but being in both in Eastern Daylight Savings Time,
it makes it a bit easier. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I was actually looking back at some of the previous episodes from ages ago with you, and I realized the last one that you've been on, I'm just looking at my notes here, is that you were on episode 125, Holiday Gift Guide 2014. And this actually has a link to the topic for today, because in that episode, one of the gifts that you had suggested that would be great for anyone to get the Wargamer in their life would be a gift certificate to their friendly local game store. Mm-hmm. What do you do when your friendly local game store closes? It shuts down. You've had to deal with this. It was December 2014, I think, is when you dealt with it with, Comics and Gaming down in Culpeper, Virginia. And I've had to deal with it. Officially, there was two game stores that closed. One I wouldn't call local to me, but I went a few times. Another was pretty local and shut down. And then one game store, it closed one location, but it moved. So it kind of felt like a closing, even though it didn't end. But you put a lot of time and effort into Comics and Gaming down there in Culpeper. So why don't you talk about it?
Okay. On that note too, it reminds me that I knew a couple of people that had, gift certificates that they hadn't spent. And we had all of about, 48 hours worth of notice that the store was closing. And, one friend of mine had just had a birthday and his wife had given him like $50 in gift certificates. So he was calling me and texting me saying, I'm in the store. Most of the shelves are empty. What do you know about this game, this game, and this game? Which, cause I gotta spend my money cause it's gonna be worthless once the store closes. So that is one disadvantage with that gift.
Well, it's a shame because I think a lot of us want to support the local businesses.
Indeed.
You don't want to necessarily be throwing your money at a big box store or in Amazon. Like I know I promote Amazon all the time, partly because of the affiliate relationship we have there, but also because I love their service. But by the same token, if I can get something at a decent price locally, I want to support it locally. And, but it's hard when you have something like this and you know it's going to go away. I got to say, I've never experienced a game store closing where you only got 48 hours of notice. So I was surprised when you blogged about that on your website.
Yeah. And a lot of us really were excited when the store opened. It was open for about a year and it was really nice having a place locally. I'm in a pretty small town. So about 20,000 people population. So not a really big population base for miniature war gaming or even like Euro board gaming. So I was really excited when the place opened. My wife ended up getting really excited about it. We met a lot of people there. And I have to say the silver lining of that game store being open for a year was that it did bring together and help us build a community that I don't think we would have been able to realize without it. Because basically we'd run into people at the store and say, hey, you know, I recognize you. I've seen you around. I didn't realize you were a gamer. And also just, you know, having people come into the store, there were a number of times when I'd be sitting there at a table setting up a demo game or something and someone would come in and look a little lost and I'd say, hey, have you ever played a tabletop game before? And, you know, they say something like, well, do you guys sell, Xbox games? And I'd be like, no, but Ticket to Ride is an excellent family game, that you can play with your whole family and you don't need an Xbox.
Oh, that's too funny. So you said that when the store closed, the gaming, local gaming community had, what was it, a 48 hours notice. How was the notice given? Was it just like someone showed up at the store one day or what was it?
It was kind of word of mouth. I mean, I actually, ran into someone at work that, and this was kind of funny because we had known each other at work for a number of years. And then at some point, once the game store opened, I played a game with her husband. And then, you know, apparently she said, oh, you know, apparently this guy, Aaron Boston, works at the same place you do. And he's a big gamer. And so like the next day she's like, I know your secret identity now. But yeah, basically I ran into her and she's like, isn't it a shame that the game store is closing like tomorrow? And I said, what are you talking about? Like I'm in there like three or four times a week. How did I not know about this? You know, cause I'd been involved with running some demo games. I was really active with trying to promote the miniature gaming. It was a diverse store. They were comic books and board games and miniature games. They kind of had a spectrum of geek interest there. Which was cool because there were definitely some people who came in there originally to buy comic books and ended up trying out some board games and some miniature games and liked it. So that definitely helped kind of grow the gaming community locally.
Well, it sounds like it was a surprise that the store was closing. And I mean, it's hard for game stores to stay in business. I think if they make it to 5 years is
right.
They tend to last and most of them will fail within 3 years. But by being diversified, you would presume that it would have increased their chances of staying open.
Right.
So, like you found out it was closed and then what happened?
Well, so the first thing we did was, or the first thing I did was Facebook had been a big part of the community, the Facebook group that we had. And I was involved with helping manage the Facebook page for the store, trying to keep the event postings updated and taking pictures of the store and trying to have the webpage look kind of nice and inviting. So the first thing I did was started a local community group page and invited most of the people that I knew, that patronized the game store and basically kind of had the rally statement of like, hey, you know, just because the game store is closing doesn't mean our community has to dissolve. And tried to basically kind of hold on to the momentum that had been built up in the past year. Of course, the really tough part about that is, I think the two components of having a good, healthy gaming community is you have to have communication as far as getting games scheduled and getting people, to be aware of what's being played and when. But you also have to have a location for those games to be played. And a game store is a great place for that. This store in particular had a lot of open gaming tables and different nights of the week were kind of devoted to different types of games. They had their card gaming events, they had their miniature gaming nights, they had board gaming nights, and there were a lot of times when people would just show up and, you know, wander in and say, hey, what are you guys playing? Oh, okay, that sounds cool. Do you mind if I join you? Sure, we're just starting. Jump on in, learn a new game. It's kind of hard to do that when it's kind of like back to, well, who can host a game at their house and what's the capacity limit? Because, you know, for me, for example, I can only fit six players around my dining room comfortably. I've done nine, but that just gets kind of crazy. Played a number of, you know, the game store, they were doing a thing after Friday Night Magic where they do Werewolf. And sometimes we'd have 35 players show up at 11 o'clock, to play Werewolf. And that was a lot of fun. So having the location, having a alternative location or any kind of location that's not just a random house, is a big part of keeping the community thriving. And one of the things that we've done here that the Magic community has done is, they actually made arrangements with the bowling alley in town, which has a large kind of like a party room, and they're able to accommodate up to, I think, at least 40 to 50 Magic players. So they've managed to hang on to their momentum, and they still have Friday Night Magics. And today they're actually having some kind of pre-release, and they're doing that at the bowling alley as well. So that's been a big help, having a place that people can go on certain days at certain times, and play their favorite games.
Well, it's interesting because, here in the U.S., in New England, independent game stores are deeply rooted. When Games Workshop started to expand with game stores throughout America, and then they came to New England, they really thought people would drive to the Games Workshop store. And so they paid tons of money to get these flagship locations in like Harvard Square, in the Natick Collection. It's the largest mall in all of New England, and all these places. And they were paying through the nose for rent. But I believe, from what I'm told, their thinking was, well, think of it as advertising. You may not sell as much, but if people are coming, they're going to see it and then they'll spread the word. But what they didn't seem to understand about New England in particular is that people are devoted to their friendly local independent game store. They're going to go to that local brick and mortar that they know, the same guy or girl who's running for 20 years, and they're going to keep on doing it. And I think in general, game stores and being able to play at the game store is kind of an American sort of thing. From what I understand, in other parts of the country, throughout Europe and the UK, for example, the space isn't there. The game stores, they have the space to sell the product. They can, maybe demo it for you. That sort of stuff. You can perhaps meet up with people to connect with them and have that kind of thing. But they don't have the table space to have all these 6x4 tables throughout the whole thing. And so they do their gaming, maybe not so much at their homes, but those gaming clubs, war gaming clubs, are very popular. So it kind of sounds like, because of the closing of this store for you, which was really close to where you lived, you were able to get there in, what was it, 20 minutes max, half hour maybe?
No, I could walk there in 20 minutes. I could drive there in about 3.
Yeah, that's ideal. But it sounds like because of its closing, one of the ways that you've been able to cope, at least with the playing aspect of wargaming, is that you kind of transition to that, what I like to call the European model of gaming in a club type setting, whether it's at your home or whatever. And that's one of the things that I've done a lot, although I gotta say, I don't get to game as much as I used to. My preference is to go to my local game store, which is about a half hour drive. But sometimes I'll game here with people, have a finished basement, so I'm able to have people down there and kind of constructed a really simple 6x4 wargaming table, which I covered episode 80 or 82, something like that. I'd have to look back, but it's like build your own wargame table or whatever it is. But the same thing is like what you said with your dining room, how you can only comfortably fit 6 people there. I can comfortably fit 5 people, maybe 4 is best, and that's room for people and they can have snacks and stuff. But there's no way you could have those 30 odd people for Werewolf. Or never mind a Friday Night Magic. Around here, Friday Night Magic, you get at least as many people as you were talking about, if not more. I mean, Magic is what keeps game stores alive. Any of those collectible card games, that's people just constantly buying. So you had mentioned that the FNM people have kind of been able to transition to gaming at that bowling alley. But what are they doing, and what are you doing when it comes to needing to make your purchases? Are there other game stores you're able to go to, or have you just not purchased anything at a brick and mortar store?
I've actually purchased a lot less since the gaming store closed.
Your wife must be happy.
I'm catching up on painting models that, I bought a year ago. So in that sense, I'm definitely staying under my wargaming budget. Miniature wargaming is a little bit more dependent on location and space. I know library hours have increased at the local public library, and there's some groups that meet there. They have study rooms that they can reserve and have doors so they can, people can meet and game in there and make a little bit of noise. But setting up even a big Arkham Horror, the big mystery game, is easier to set up than a miniatures game with all your terrain and everything. So that, yeah, that definitely is makes things more complicated. I do have a game store that I'm going back to. It is close to an hour away drive. So it's one of those things that I go there if I'm going to go shopping for other things. Or I'll go there if there's a big event, but it's not the kind of thing on a Tuesday night, I think, after work. Hey, I'm going to go play a game for an hour. Because I'm looking at, you know, round trip 2 hour time and on a weekday, I'm just too old for that kind of, that kind of commitment.
I know what you mean though, because way back in the day, I used to game at this place called Danger Planet Games. It was on the North Shore of Massachusetts. Well, not quite Metro West North. People who live in Massachusetts will know what I mean. It's not all the way up near like the top arm of Mass, but anyway, from where I am, it's about half hour, 45 minutes to get to it. And I would go on weekends because this was back in the days when you could play Battlefleet Gothic and that kind of stuff and was interested in all that. But because of its distance, I would really only go once a week on weekends. And then my local game store, Battleground Games and Hobbies, they were originally a one spot in the town of Abington. And when they were there, I mean, granted I was in college, but when they were there, I was there every night and I'd be there, you know, from say for around dinner time all the way to midnight or 4 a.m. and just game all sorts of stuff every night and, you know, do that. And then next day go to class and work and all that stuff and the same thing over and over. And then when they moved, timing wise, it kind of, is coincidental to when I got married. And I think these life changes are something that alters people's gaming habits, in addition to when like the local store closes. So, when Battleground closed, they moved. I mean, they weren't done. They moved and they had another location, which is where I tend to go now. But when they moved to the new location in Abington, I've been only maybe a couple times and it's, you know, 10 minutes down the road at best from where it used to be. But it doesn't have the same feel to me. It doesn't have the same vibe. It's something about it that's different. And, I'm not quite sure what it is, but I don't have any inclination to drive to the new location in Abington to game. I mean, for me, it would be, say, about an hour, depending on traffic and time and day of the week and stuff, 45 minutes to an hour to get to the new location, the other one, you know, that 10 minutes closer. So when I want a game there, or I actually game at their secondary location in Plainville, which is about half hour from me, it's easier to get to. And again, I don't game there as often. And if I need historicals, the best place for me is actually this place in Malden, right outside Boston. But to get to it, you kind of have to go into Boston and shoot up. But I plan these trips far in advance and think, okay, I need to buy these things. Let me save up. Let me write my list and all that kind of stuff. So it's not like how you were saying where you would go to the game store 3 to 4 times a week. That just doesn't happen. And I don't know if it's because of location, because of age, because I'm married or what it is. I mean, it could be a combination of things for both of us.
Yeah. And, So I kind of do think I have a couple things to offer that could be helpful. And especially now after a couple months have gone by, I don't quite feel so bitter and upset. Definitely felt like, there's a bit of a grief process that happened after the game store closed. I kind of was thinking in terms of, you know, like a favorite old uncle that had cancer and you like knew he might not live long, but, you know, still when he passes, it's kind of a bummer. And this was kind of one of those things where, you know, I didn't have really high hopes for a game store thriving for a long time, but I thought, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to support it and to try to run games and invite people to come in. So when it closed, I mean, it did close suddenly and it was a surprise. But I've largely gotten over that. The big thing though is, like I said, the silver lining was there was a community that had kind of come together and had coalesced around that store. And I wanted to keep that momentum going and keep the community going. And I think the two big things with that is, really maintaining communication. It's easy when you have a store and, you know, even though they didn't have a bulletin board, like some of the older stores I remember when I was younger, they had a Facebook page and they would post events coming up and people would contact each other and set up games through the game store page. And then since that was gone, we created a miniature wargaming group page, which has helped a lot to coordinate games. I tried doing a monthly painting challenge because we would do a lot of painting lunches and painting meetups. We're just like, hey, come by the game store on Sunday and have some pizza and paint for an hour or so. So still trying to keep the spirit of that going with the communication. And but the other component that I think is really important is having the location, having the place to meet. And that's definitely become more of a challenge since the store is closed. And you know, a lot fewer games are being played because of that. And we had one player who was kind of the champion for the 40K side of the community, and he got married and got a new job and moved to a different county. So the 40K, contingent has really kind of almost come to a halt, it seems like, because it just seems like nobody's playing any games these days. They talk about it and post about wanting to play, but nobody really has the space for it. You know, that's a great thing about a game store is you can come in, they have terrain there you can use. You can keep your armies in the case, but I know when that game store first opened, I was living in an apartment and there was just not a real practical way that I could host games in my apartment. So it was really nice to, and also it's a great way to meet new gamers that you don't necessarily know if you want them in your home. But again, the communication is the prime thing. You have to keep the dialogue going among everybody in the group. And I have to say too, that I never really considered myself much of a leader or an organizer. I was a very shy kid when I was in high school. But I think when it comes to kind of keeping a gaming community together and growing it, it really does take some people that are willing to just step up and take the lead and try organizing things. Because if you kind of wait around for somebody else to do it, it might never happen. And I would recommend anybody who goes through the experience of not having a gaming store anymore, even if you don't have a place to host games, work on the communication side, work on trying to get people together. And even if you just say, hey, how about, you know, the third Sunday of next month, let's try to do a event where we get four or five or six of us together and we meet up and we just paint and talk about gaming, if nothing else. That's the kind of thing that keeps the community going.
Well, I think it's good that you guys have been able to use social media in particular to kind of stay in connection, because like you said, the game store was how you were able to communicate. It was the place and the medium for your communication. But without any communication, I think, and I don't know if you would agree with me, but I think all of you would have stopped gaming to some degree, and that maybe you wouldn't even consider yourselves gamers anymore. I don't know, again, if that's true. That's just kind of a thought on my part, that maybe like if you lost what connected all of you, you just kind of drift away and you do your own thing, and maybe you game, maybe you don't. It's hard trying to find those at work. We keep on using this term, and we're not the ones to pioneer, but it's called the third space. It's this newish theory throughout the US in particular, about how people have a first space, which is their home, where they go to bed and where they sleep and all that. And the second space is where they work. But people need a third space, somewhere like a game store for a lot of us, or a coffee shop or libraries or whatever, places where they can go and there's not structure in that they need to be there. There's no one particular person in charge, so to speak, but everyone's welcomed. You can kind of come and drift. It's very casual, relaxed. You're able to engage in conversation and get to know one another. And having that third space is very important. So when you lose it, such as when you lose your game store, it's hard. And I know what you mean, because I would love to have more people over to game at my place, but it's hard. Not only is it hard because, I mean, I'm married and I gotta keep that into consideration, but I got a baby, and I mean, I can't be having people trek over all the time for different things, and scheduling is hard. One thing that I think it's kind of neat trying to find that other location. I love how you mentioned libraries, but when Joshua Shoebridge was on, he heads up the Marimbula, and I know he's going to correct me because I keep on mispronouncing that, but the Wargaming Society down there in Australia, and they game in a yacht club, which is amazing. Even maybe like trying to, every so often, everyone pulls their money together and rent space at a hotel, rent a small conference room or something that you can get for half a day or whatever and game like that way. Or some people do Kickstarters for one-day conventions. They'll get a small hotel space or American Legion or a church hall or you know, anything like that. And then you rent it out and you get all your gaming in that way. I wondered, since you've lost your game store, do you find or think that this means you would end up going more often to gaming conventions to game with them? I know you're near a lot of the big ones from HMGS, but there's all sorts of gaming conventions and you can get your gaming in that way too.
Yeah, no, I am looking at going to I'm going to Historicon next weekend. And then, I'm definitely going to Nova Open in September. And actually earlier this morning, I went up to, participate at least for a little bit with a terrain build that they were doing, for Nova Open. Definitely kind of back to taking on more of an organizer role, I suppose. I think you and I had talked about this. I don't know if we talked about it on a recording, but before the gaming store opened, I said probably most of my hobby time was devoted to either painting, or reading rules, or posting online, or writing blog reports, and very little of it was spent actually playing games. And then after the game store opened, as my wife can confirm, I was probably there 3 or 4 nights a week, and I had a lot of my friends out in other areas that were used to seeing me post online saying, what happened? Like, are you still alive? I haven't seen you post anything for like months. And that was because I was actually spending most of my hobby time playing actual games. And, I didn't get a lot of painting done during that time necessarily either, but I did play a lot of games. And I think I learned a lot about, how different personalities play games. I think I'm getting better at recognizing what people or different players are looking for in their games and trying to tailor scenarios and open game days and demos to appealing to a wider range of players. So, it's funny cause I did stop in with, the older game store I used to go to, and she's like, whenever you're ready to come back and run a demo game, let me know. It's fewer and farther in between. And you're right. I have to plan things out. It's not so spontaneous as it used to be where I could text somebody after work and say, hey, you want to meet me at the game store for 20 minutes and we'll play a medium sized game. So yeah, that doesn't happen anymore, but you know, I think I'm making up for it by putting more energy into kind of the organization and promotion and trying to get people to coordinate their efforts. So.
One thing that I found to be useful, not that I do a ton of it, but I do more of it than I ever did before, is solo wargaming. I read Donald Featherstone's book, Solo Wargaming. You can buy an edition of it on Amazon. John Curry from the Wargaming Project is, editing them and republishing them, basically. And you can get a newer one of this. I read an original, I think. And, it has a lot of good ideas in there. Something you really want to game on a Tuesday night and you're not able to get anywhere. No one can come over or whatever. And you can just throw something together that way and do so. I mean, that's always an option, for people too. Maybe do a little more solo wargaming and that kind of stuff.
Yep. And trying to convince my wife to play more games too. So she's actually in the room with me, and this is a whole nother topic that, if you want to set up another time, Jonathan, it's funny because I listened to the conversation we had about, getting your significant other to play more war games. But real briefly, there's a new, Warhammer game out, and, regardless of your opinions on it, I asked my wife, hey, do you want to take like 20 minutes and try out this new game with me? I just want to try it out. I've read all the rules. I want to play. And she said, promise it's only going to take 20 minutes. And I said, I promise at 20 minutes, we'll play however much we will. And then we'll be done. We'll go do something else. Well, we started playing and 45 minutes later, after she had used my wood elves to destroy my Skaven, she said, why don't you put more models on the table so we can play a little bit more?
I haven't had much time to properly read through all of, what's it called? Age of Sigmar. I took a glance and I got to say, I'm loving what I'm seeing. Now, if they would only lower their prices to a more reasonable standpoint, they could probably get me back. But then again, I have so much stuff that's new in box with plastic wrap and stuff on it. I could just open up stuff, put it together and play with the new rules. And I think I could be happy with Warhammer Fantasy, which I never thought I'd say.
Yeah. And, you know, there's always those historical miniatures out there too that, you know, that's one thing that strikes me when I hear people complain about, you know, edition changes or, lack of model availability is the historical wargamers have been managing to play games for decades without any core set of rules and not necessarily a single supplier of models in a consistent scale, but they've been having fun with it. And I think I'm trying to kind of apply that side to the more mainstream side of things and just saying, hey, it's going to be okay. You know what? It's all going to be okay. Let's just have some fun.
That's a good way to think about it. And I mean, I think back to when I jumped into historicals and how confused I was and disoriented. And thanks to Henry Hyde for being the kind-hearted gentleman he is. Cause because of him, I'm got into historicals and I'm still playing, but trying to figure it out, it's hard. So making that jump, even though it's within the same realm, it's still fantasy. It's so different. Making that jump is going to be really hard for people. And I think there's going to be quite a few people who won't be able to do it. And they can play the old way, which is great. And there'll be a lot of people who can and want to do it and they'll play the new way. But you're right. I would love for some other episode to talk about Age of Sigmar and just kind of how it opens up wargaming to more people and makes it more accessible. I think it's great. I'm actually pretty excited about it.
All right. Well, cool. And, yeah, I'm going to be a Historica next weekend. I'm going to play a little bit more bolt action and, I'm excited to see, to see everything. I'm going to, maybe play test some Wrath of Kings. There's a lot of stuff coming out these days. There's a lot of exciting new games and new miniatures, from a wide range of producers. And I think the hobby is just expanding in a lot of different directions. And I think that's exciting. I think lots of options and lots of choices. I mean, it can be overwhelming because people just don't really know which direction to go in. But, I think having a local community that makes some decisions in certain directions helps. I know, Warhammer Fantasy wasn't my first choice, but because a lot of people were interested in playing it, that made it a whole lot easier to get excited about it. So I think it's definitely having a community that communicates is a big key to having a thriving experience. So I agree with your solo wargaming can be fulfilling, but it is so nice when you can actually get five people in the room that all want to play the same game.
That is. And actually, look, speaking about other people communicating, let's move on to the mailbag section of the show because I love hearing from people who listen to the show and who see what's going on social media and everything. It's being able to interact with all of you who listen to the show and all of you who have been guests on the show is one of my favorite parts of doing podcasting. It's what actually makes it fun. I mean, otherwise it's just me talking into the void, right? So on Facebook, we had listener Denise who commented on a posting we put up on the TotalCon Facebook page about episode 138. And that was Australian Wargaming with Joshua Shoebridge, wargamingrecon.com/WR138. And she says, quote, sending this episode to Wes in Canberra, unquote. We talked about all sorts of things you can do down in Australia and what it's like to be a wargaming dad and all that kind of stuff. So Denise, thank you for your comment on Facebook and I hope Wes enjoys that episode. It was a lot of fun to do with Joshua and I really liked it. And I hope all of you who listen to it and have listened to it have enjoyed it as well. And then listener Mike Payne, who is owner of the Barbarians Facebook group, said about episode 137, and that was the Great Facebook Groups for Wargamers. He said, quote, "Great show, Jonathan. Thanks for the plug," unquote. Well, thank you, Mike, for sending that bit of feedback to us through Facebook. In case you haven't listened to that episode or in case you forgot, Barbarians is on our list of great Facebook groups for Wargamers. So if you're not a member, please join because they are amazing. And then I want to let all of you know that the show is made possible by Audible.com. Audible is this great Amazon subsidiary. And one of the things I love about them is because I love to read, and I think, Aaron, I know you love to read. I know you love to listen to audiobooks. You and your wife, in fact, I believe, do. And with the baby, I just don't have as much time to pick up a regular book to read. I wish I did, but I can't. So what I do is I'm able to listen to audiobooks a lot. I put them in the car. I listen to it on my iPhone. I listen when I'm at work or around the house. And Audible has tons of great audiobooks. So why am I telling you about this? Well, right now I'm listening to a fantastic one. I'm listening to Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park. Yes, because Jurassic World is out. And I've never actually read this. I heard about it and I thought it was great. And I'm on, I don't know, a fourth of the way through maybe. They've just gotten to the island, but there's tons of backstory, great narration. It's very well produced. And you can get Jurassic Park or another great audiobook for free. That's right. It doesn't cost you anything. Absolutely free from audible.com. You get a free 30-day trial to Audible and a free audiobook download by using this very special link just for all of you who listen to wargamingrecon.com. It's wargamingrecon.com/audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E. And Aaron, are you listening to anything pretty good right now? You tend to have a steady stream of audiobooks that you like to listen.
Yeah, I've always been the kind of reader that I never just start one book and then read one book and then finish it and then move on to the next. I always have three or four going at the same time. I just started the Honor Harrington series with a really good narrator. And I'm listening to, A Distant Mirror, which is a history of the, Middle Ages by, Barbara Tuchman, which is an older book, but again, a good reader. And a good listen. And I have to say the great thing about, Audible titles is you can paint miniatures while you're listening to them. And I know you're not the best painter in the world, Jonathan, but
that's a kind way to put it. Yeah.
Dresden Files too. Definitely some cool fantasy in a modern day setting with kind of a, detective, rogue cop kind of slant to it, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, those are really good. I read the real books of the first two of those, and then I read they had four volumes of two different graphic novels that were really good. Dresden Files is very well done. It maybe I should listen to them instead.
So, is that graphic novels?
Hey, and you know, Audible books are real books. I've had this argument with people for decades now. I remember getting cassette tapes from the library. And I think that the best example I have is I actually listened to the entire cassette multi-volume library edition of War and Peace.
Oh, God.
And I have to say I would have never read that book in paper form all the way through, but I did listen to the audio all the way through. So I think if you can listen to the audio version of something, it's better than not reading it at all.
Well, one of the cool things about Audible, and I know we're talking a lot about it, and I'm almost done really, but for anyone who's a Game of Thrones fan, they have a version of Sun Tzu's The Art of War, and it's narrated by the guy who plays Littlefinger, so it's in a Scottish accent. I think that just sounds really cool. But you can get anything, really. They have, I think it's like 40,000 different titles on Audible. You get it, you download it, you own it, it's yours forever, you can do whatever you want with it. And you get your first book for free with a free 30-day trial. Wargamingrecon.com/audible. I can't recommend it enough. As you know, I don't recommend anything on the show unless I actually love it. And Audible is just, it's a great thing to do. You get a free 30-day trial, free audiobook. You get yours to keep. So you do the trial, you get the audiobook, and you say, no, do you know what? I love the audiobook. I like the service. Maybe I can't afford it right now, or maybe I don't want to do it right now. You cancel. That audiobook is yours to keep forever. Or if you love the service and you want to continue on and you pay the low monthly fee, I think it's like, what is it? $7.95 a month, I think, after that. And then you get a book every single month. So it's amazing. I don't know how Amazon does it. I really don't, but They do a really good job with this. And then, Aaron, actually, to pull up on something you were talking about earlier, I want to move into our announcements section, but you were talking about...
I just want to say one more awesome thing about Audible, though, before you move on.
Okay.
You can listen to it. You can download an audio file and listen to it as like an MP3 format or whatever it is. I think it's MP3. You can actually listen to it streaming through the Audible application. And what's cool about that is we've done it where we start a book listening to it online on the computer upstairs, and then we go into another room, have lunch or something, and then get out the iPad and open it up, and it picks up right where we left off, even though we're listening to it on a different device. So it's kind of cool little thing there.
Well, that's something Amazon's really perfected. They've done it with the eBooks too for people who have Kindles. You can start reading and it remembers where you're at. I don't really know of any other company who's doing this kind of stuff who has that. So knowing that Amazon's behind Audible, I think makes a big difference for a lot of people. And it's a good reason to check it out. Like I said, it's free, no risk, nothing. And you get a free audiobook no matter what. You pick it, it's yours, and then you can always cancel if you don't like it. But earlier you were talking about the importance of communication for Wargamers and just using that as a way to connect and find out what's going on. Well, last year we talked about this, and it's being done again this year. But Wargame Soldiers and Strategy Magazine is doing the Great Wargaming Survey for 2015. It takes only 5 to 10 minutes of your time. And when you're done doing the survey, we'll have a link in the show notes. But when you're done with the survey, you get a coupon code, 10% off anything at the current survey store. You order online, you get it. So I think a great way to use that 10% off coupon is you take that, you use our link so you can get a 1-year digital subscription to Wargame Soldiers and Strategy with that 10% off, brings it down to $15.26 at wargamingrecon.com/WSSdigital. In, you know, each issue of this in print is $10 American. And so you figure you spend $10 American for each print issue, or for $15.26 with the 10% off coupon code, you get a whole year digitally. I think it's a no-brainer. I love WSNS. Huge fan of them, and I love having them around. I think this is a great deal. Normally, it's $16.95 for a year of the digital sub with this special link that we have, but use the 10% off on it, and then add other stuff and get back issues or subs to other things. It's great, but just use that link, wargamingrecon.com/WSSdigital, and it'll get you what you need. And you could also be one of the very few lucky people. They're going to randomly draw people who've taken the survey, and you can win some really amazing prizes. I don't think they've revealed them just yet, but last year there was all sorts of really great things from, not just from them, but like they gave it away that other gaming companies had given to them to do. So it's really cool. And like I said, it takes 5 to 10 minutes of your time. It basically asks you what kind of games you like to play, what scales or size of models do you use? Do you do historicals or sci-fi? How do you find out about the games and that sort of stuff? And I can tell you though, that one, I've taken the survey. It's quick, it's easy, and I had a good time doing it. And two, Jasper will be on at a later date to talk about the results, just like he was last year. So last year, I think we were the first place to have the results outside of official current salary people. And so we shared it with you then, and we're going to do it again for Great Wargaming Survey 2015. But be sure to check out the show notes so that you get that link to take the survey, because it's worth it. And then I want to remind everyone about our live page, because it's a great way to watch what's going on when we do live streaming, but also you can interact with guests. So if you were at the live page when this was being live streamed, for example, you could be in the chat room and interact with Aaron. You could interact with me, questions and all sorts of kind of stuff. It's a great way to have that sense of communication and community. Two buzzwords I talk about a lot, and Aaron's been talking about a lot here on the show. So I want to make sure that I just let you know about that live page, wargamingrecon.com/live. And at this point, I want to thank those of you who are members and backing us on Patreon. We have a few different levels there. You can back us for as little as $1 an episode. That's roughly $2 a month. But if you back us at that $3 per episode mark, you get thanked by name in every single episode at which you back us for that level. So if you back us at that level for an entire year, you get named every single episode that comes out during that year. So I want to give a very special thank you to Dave and the Wargames at Battleshades Facebook group for supporting us on Patreon. And I want to let all of you know that if you're not a member of Patreon, it's easy to do. you go to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. Backers on Patreon get new episodes of Wargaming Recon before anyone else. So you get first dibs on all of it. And I got to say, we just recently met our second goal. So that means that we will be working towards our new goal. We're only $30 away. The new goal is called Upgrade Wargaming Recon Communications Array. Well, what does that mean, right? That's a lot of words and it's kind of crazy. So if we meet that goal, if we get $30 per episode, we'll be able to sign up with a fantastic podcast host that will store all the episodes. And then because of that, through the magic of their storage and their technology, they're able to get the episodes to you faster than you get them now. So when you go to download it, it's speed of lightning. It's so fast, in fact, that you can kind of compare it to walking from point A to B and taking a bullet train from point A to B. So hopefully we'll get that, because I would love to be able to get you guys these episodes faster so that when you press the download button, it's there right away. It's only $30 away, and that's actually pretty easy to do. If 10 listeners back me on Patreon for just $3 an episode, not only will we meet that goal, and not only will you be helping me out here, but you'll also be mentioned as a Patreon backer on every single episode in which you back it. That includes the audio, of course, the streaming, show notes, and all that kind of stuff. We can make it happen. It's pretty easy. And if you can't afford that, don't worry. There's a level of dollar an episode. Or episodes are always going to be free to everyone. You don't have to back. This is just a way to kind of help keep the show going and all these kind of cool enhancements to make it better for you. But the show's always free. You go to wargamingrecon.com. You can get it there through your favorite catcher app. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. So it's always free. It's always available. But these are just kind of cool enhancements that are made possible by our backers on Patreon. And then I want to remind everyone about the episode guide, because the episode guide is really cool. Let's say you want to know what's coming up soon, and you're thinking, oh, there's a new episode coming out, but I don't really know what it's going to be, and you want to know what's going on down the road, you check the episode guide, and then you find out. So for example, I can tell you, the next episode will release on August 3rd, 2015, and it is episode 141, where I have special guest Peter Blix Bryant coming on to talk about the TSR Podcast Network. This is an unofficial successor to TSR Inc., which made all those great games, precursor to D&D kind of stuff. And they have a whole bunch of stuff going on. Blix is going to be producing all their shows, actually, for the podcast network. So he's going to be talking about it. And actually, I'm going to be a guest on one of the shows on their network at a later date. All that's being worked out, and when we have the information, I will share that with all of you. But I believe that is all I have. So any last words of wisdom from you, Aaron, on things that suggestions for people with wargaming or anything, or ways that people can stay in touch with you?
Well, I just emphasize the just because a game store closes, they are at the base a business and need to make a profit so they can pay their rent and their bills. But a game store is not the heart of a community. It's the gamers that's what makes a community work. Take on the lead, even if it's just trying to encourage other people to help organize games, and look at your local library, bowling alley, VFW hall. I mean, who knows what kind of space might be open to helping you host games. So just keep on game is what I would say.
For all of you who are listening, be sure to check out the show notes for the show. You can get them at wargamingrecon.com/WR140. They'll have links to everything that we talked about. Aaron, thank you yet again for coming on the show. I love when you come on. I always look forward to it. We have such a good time, and I can't wait to have you back on at some other time to talk about all sorts of other cool stuff.
All right. Well, thank you, Jonathan. I enjoyed it.
Oh, as Aaron already said, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how sad you are by a local game store shutting down, or how excited you are that you found a new one or in a new community, you always have to, you need to, you gotta keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Are you a wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer? Then you need to tune in to the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.